But this, that's, you know, that's a commercial garden. So that, this, whatever I work at night, I'm gonna choose that.
Your hands were very warm.
Yeah, right, yeah. And I said, like, slipping down. I'm like,
it is warm today.
Yeah. I made it in decent time, so.
Members of the public joining the meeting in person can participate using the speaker slips in the back of the room. Members of the public can also join the meeting by computer, tablet, or smartphone by accessing the link which is listed on the meeting notice and agenda on the city's webpage. To join the Zoom webinar by telephone, please dial 1-669-254-5252 and prompted input ID 161-928-1857. This information is also available on the agenda. When the item is introduced that you would like to comment on, please raise your hand by either tapping the raise your hand icon on your computer, tablet, smartphone, or by dialing star 9 on your phone. When it is your turn to speak, I will call you by your name as it appears on the Zoom webinar attendee list, or I will read out the last four digits of the telephone number that you have called in the meeting. Click the unmute prompt that will appear on your computer, tablet, or smartphone, or dial star 6 on your phone.
Thank you.
So we'll, with that information, we'll start with item number two, which is approval of last month's August 7th meeting minutes.
So I had sent in a correction?
Yes.
Yes.
So Jeff corrected on the Vision Zero subcommittee item. Steph, will you be able to repost the agenda?
Yes.
Okay. And the correction is basically to reflect the improvements on Camino Santa Fe Road between Miramar Road and Carl Road, not Miramar Road, between Carl Road and Camino Santa Fe Road. Do we have...
Along with the description of why it's important.
Okay.
Okay, that's kind of an alternate approach to what we've been doing before, so as long as that's how we want to be doing that, we can add the additional language. So in addition to the...
Because I know the minutes only reflect actions that were taken. Was...
But that was on the subcommittee, that was from the subcommittee talking about what was discussed and what was the importance of why we wanted an action from...
May I ask a clarifying question?
Yes.
Only because we've also attached the minutes from the subcommittee. So I want to make sure that we've included both. But if you want that in both sets of minutes, that's fine. I just want to ask the clarifying question so we make sure we approach it.
If we can, because the importance was to get a response from staff of both, what can this be addressed? Because it's that important.
Basically, you're saying because we added the minutes of the subcommittee, that's why not reflected in our minutes for this meeting.
Yes.
Okay.
But I wasn't at the meeting, so I'm like the blind one here, which I think might be good in this case because based on there was an action taken, we want to do this, but what is this? Like, it doesn't. So we can just have, is it staff? Do we want staff to reach out to the staff team, just like send an email? Is that what was?
Yes.
Okay. Again, I'm going blind because I want to make sure. I think my ignorance is probably good in that regard.
Yeah, maybe the clarifying question I have is an amendment to the minutes, because it's discussion of minutes. It's a little meta in some ways. If we could amend the minutes if it's part of the delivery of the minutes itself, to staff, or is it discussion of minutes, and then that's where you would write it up as an action on the minutes in addition to the approval?
Yeah, I think we made a small error, because what we should have done was voted to approve the recommendation of minutes from the subcommittee, and then that action should have been reflected in the minutes.
Yeah, because last meeting we corrected a lot of provisions.
Quick update, because we have to. Yeah.
So
think.
There was no action on that item.
Correct.
The minutes that we're approving from last meeting
is
just be accepted. The minutes from Division
Zero Subcommittee. Given that we made that small mistake, it wasn't included in the small mistake. Can we write
that? Well, I think we can get staff to write it up. I think we ended up saying that we needed the staff to write it up, period. So we are okay moving forward. I think.
Yeah, I don't see why we can't or can to roll that as a follow-up action to the subcommittee on this agenda, right? And just and not retroactively change it, but just
that's all.
Okay,
perfect.
Okay,
then we can kind of, it'll be nice and clean.
Okay. So we'll keep the minutes as is and then provide them.
With the edit Jeff made about the,
exactly.
I just want to make sure that we're capturing it correctly, because I want to make sure that the action, you get the action, the outcome you're asking.
Right, that's all with, that's from,
Thank you for the clarification.
No, thank you.
Okay. Do we have any speakers in the queue for this one?
There are no speakers.
I move we approve the minutes as corrected.
Okay, perfect. Your approval, well, I'm excited with that. Any abstains? Any opposition? Okay, thank you. Okay, so now we'll move to non-agenda public comment. We'll give that 2 minutes. And this is, do you have any ready in the queue?
Yeah, I don't see any hands raised, but just let me say, if you would like to speak during agenda item 3, please raise your hand by your raise hand icon and your phone or your tablet, or by dialing star 9. And there are no speakers that are selected.
Sounds good. Do we have non-agenda public comment from board members? Sounds good. We'll move over to item number 4, which is the draft City of San Diego Zero Emission Vehicle Strategy. This has been Daniel a while back. We kind of got it on the agenda. And I will provide an update on the draft Zero Emission Vehicle Strategy. And we'll answer feedback from our board members.
Thank you, Mary, for asking. Reminding us that we needed to bring this back and for just expressing so much. I think most of you know who I am, but in light of just sort of the context, reminding folks that in the Sustainability and Mobility Department, I serve as the Zero Emissions Vehicle Program Manager. And so I do all the like publicly facing work in that space. And so one of the big efforts that we were wrapping up is the ZEV strategy. And so, sorry, next slide.
Sorry, just making sure when I share, maybe I'll just check with a parallel computer. Hey, Chris, is that showing?
Yes.
I'm still getting a green box around the video of all of you. I'm just making sure it's showing.
Well, I see.
Okay.
So just before I jump into the ZEV strategy itself, I wanted to just offer a policy kind of context reminder for folks to the extent that you're not living in the ZEV space specifically. So the federal government is actively making zero emission vehicles advancements by taking the position that by 2030, 50% of all vehicles sold nationwide will be ZEV, and that by 2050, the nation's transportation sector will have net emissions. And then, as you know, the state of California has been a leader in accelerating the transition to ZEVs. The 2023 building code requires new construction to include EV charging, and in conjunction with building codes, has set aggressive goals for 100% of in-state sales of new passenger vehicles, drayage trucks, and off-road vehicles be ZEV by 2035. And 100% of medium and heavy duty vehicles be ZEV by 2045. So locally, and I think this space, I would think folks are at least a bit more familiar, but locally we are all aware that transportation is the largest contributor of greenhouse gas emissions in the city and really across the region. And as such, the city's climate action plan includes extensive and varied actions that are very related to transportation and really thinking about this kind of multi-pronged approach to the sector. So a lot of the various things that we talked about collectively. Climate Action Plan Measure 2.2 establishes targets for our city fleet. So 100% of electric light-duty fleet vehicles and 75% of medium-duty and heavy-duty vehicles by 2035. That's not my problem. But then, talking about Climate Action Plan Measure 2.3, that sets a target of 16% of all light-duty vehicle miles traveled be electric by 2030, and by 2035, that target goes up to 25%. So further that Measure 2.3 includes several actions necessary to reach these targets, and the foundational action is the development of a citywide EV strategy to guide future activities. So as I mentioned, Measure 2.3 is focused on increasing EV adoption through development versus electric specific, it became important to really kind of integrate those other alternative fuels like hydrogen, for example, into the development of this strategy. So the EV miles traveled target set forth in the CAB are combined with, like I mentioned, a lot of other actions to reach an overall mobility 50-50 goal. Those remaining trips, to transition those then remaining trips, to zero emissions. So there's other modes, and then whatever's left, really transitioning, you know, those vehicle trips to electric. Or zero emission, So this places a premium, really, on developing programs that encourage the integration of all modes into that broader transportation network through the city's mobility loading prioritization. So this transition is going to touch almost every sector. And so the intention here is that this ZEST strategy is to serve as a companion to other city efforts and identifies the areas of action that the city can take, broken down into 5 core strategy pillars to accelerate and accommodate ZEV adoption and ensure equitable access to charging and clean fueling stations. This actually is one of my favorite slides just because it's got a lot of fun facts in it. So I'm just kind of taking a step back and looking at the current ZEV landscape. I think that, we can all agree EVs are here, and the rate of adoption really is going to just continue to accelerate. At least, that's what we're seeing locally and throughout the state. And the city knows that we need to be prepared to facilitate that growth in an equitable, accessible, and reliable way. So the chart on the left here, that reflects the forecast for new electric vehicle sales nationwide through 2030, at which time EVs are expected to be about 30% of all new car sales. Nationwide, about 7.5% of the 2023 vehicle market share were full EV, and of that, about 34% of those vehicles are in California. And then when really looking at California's market share of full EVs, that number is substantially higher, and it goes up to almost 21.5%. So I do also want to point out and highlight the map on the right here. So hopefully everyone can recognize this is San Diego. This map really reflects the number of plug-in, so those that kind of have both the gas and electric power, and battery electric vehicles by zip code across the city in 2023. And this is making up about half of the region's registration, so thinking countywide, the city actually makes up a good chunk of that. But what you can see here is sort of the distribution of where the vehicles are. So that's something that really is telling and something that we're really trying to work through. Next slide. So, as I mentioned, the ZEST strategy comprises 5 core strategy pillars with broad actions beneath each of them. The transition to zero emissions technologies relies on strategic formulation and implementation of local policy and planning initiatives and tools, including the Climate Action Plan, Mobility Master Plan, street design and engineering tools, and environmental justice elements. And the development of a broad and accessible ZEV infrastructure network is a multifaceted undertaking that really necessitates a well-coordinated and streamlined city services and processes. So pillars 1 and 2 that you see here are those core strategies that the city really has more direct control over. So things like land use and codes and permit streamlining. So those things that we can really help ensure that the city itself isn't the barrier to ZEV adoption. So pillars 3 and 4 focus on the city engagement and coordination with our partners and community leaders to really address all areas of the economy that are going to be affected by this transition. And acknowledging there really isn't a one-size-fits-all way to conduct outreach. Every community is a little bit different, and different needs different questions, different concerns. So really, you know, thinking about tailored community outreach and diverse engagement strategies to really enhance public awareness and understanding of DEBS, while also really trying to help address specific community concerns and constraints, be it range anxiety or otherwise. Transportation electrification can't be done in a vacuum. We really need to collaborate, not just across city departments, but regionally to build an integrated and connected charging network. So we work with our partners, the county, Sandag, and a number of the other cities, just to really sort of understand, you know, we don't want there to be, you know, stranded sort of entity or human that's not able to really get to where they need to go throughout the region. And another thing really is forming partnerships, especially with entities like local businesses, nonprofits, training institutions. Those relationships are really crucial. And really thinking about supporting the transitioning skills necessary to grow our local workforce, as well as the strong collaborations to grow with our first and second responders. Because, you know, they're first on scene sometimes, and so we all really want to be able to coordinate and communicate and leverage experiences so that we can really think about that in design considerations and the like. So that is pillars 3 and 4. And pillar 5 is all about building out the charging and fueling infrastructure. So getting the steel in the ground and the wires to the grid, and really working with the utilities to ensure there's enough grid capacity to create that reliable, accessible, and equitable charging. So the ZEP strategy is just one of the actions within the CAP, as I mentioned before, and the focus on reducing transportation emissions. And as such, there are several activities already underway. So trying to cap sort of the things that we are doing, we're going to soon do, and things that, what do we need to do? And so the strategy, excuse me, is one way to help sort of align some of those aspects that we're working on in sort of in this space, so that we can really make sure that we're all rowing in the same direction. So you can see some of those things here. And so what's next? So wanted to make sure that we got this, you know, to you all, so that you all sort of had it fresh in your mind. You're welcome to go take a look at the ZEP strategy, the draft strategy online, and after hearing from you all, we will go ahead and integrate any of the other feedback that we got to finalize the strategy. But thinking about this and understanding, you know, this isn't going to be an isolated effort. As things progress, we will go back and revisit the strategy to understand sort of if there are things that we need to update, modify, be able to say, yay, we did it already. So again, you know, that's the next step, and then looking at those actions where the ZEP components will be proactively incorporated. So talked about things that already sort of aligned, but where can we proactively get ahead of some of the activities that we're doing to make sure that these considerations get integrated on the front end, as well as those actions that are sort of exclusive to the strategy, and then the metrics and the data and established feedback pathways to be able to track progress and adjust as needed. That strategy, like I said, isn't an isolated incident or effort. It'll be reevaluated and revised in coordination, likely with the CAP pool updates, mobility master plan updates, and just really kind of to align with the market dynamics and policy and/or changes. So that concludes my presentation. Again, feedback now. Happy to share the link as well.
Thank you very much for sending us the link in the agenda. I took the opportunity to read that over the weekend. Two things.
Yes.
One, the city. The city's goal ought to be way in advance of the public. If you look looked at your pillar two, I think it is, you have the city not even achieving zero light vehicle electric trips by 2035. You have it only like 27% or something. The city should be leading. The city should be buying every electric vehicle in sight right now for all the normal stuff so the city can say, see, it's doable. Secondly, when we get to pillar five, I'm not sure we really take the consumer into account because you go into quite some detail on level one, level two, level three chargers and where you're going to put all these different ones. But as a consumer, okay, I want the level three charger, the most powerful, quickest one, in a gas station. Okay, similar. In a pavilion where I can pull in, plug it in, get what I need, and get out of there. The other ones, hey, in a parking space, at the zoo, by the park, in the supermarket where I just plug it in while I'm doing some shopping or whatever, and I don't care, just topping up the charge a little bit. I'm not in a hurry. Okay? It's extremely important that the labels be such that it's easy to find, whether that's an app, okay, in some cases it is, if you do it through one of the car manufacturers who will remain unnamed, I can find all the high-powered chargers and nothing back. If I go through the city's electric thing, I can't tell which charger does what. Likewise, we put, for instance, that an excellent picture there of the beam one. It was probably on the next to last slide. And the beam portable one, that one up in the upper right, those can be placed anywhere and they can be moved depending on how the man goes. They run about $20,000 each. But they have some really good things going for them. They have batteries or capacitors, depending on how you order it, that enables it to do level two or level three. But that's the kind of thing we ought to be looking at. Why aren't we requiring those to be put up on top of parking garages? Okay, can we make that happen?
The top parking garages?
Sure, the top level parking garage is always out there in the sunshine.
So we were going to actually put some there?
That infrastructure cost is zero as long as the foundation will support it, because they're pretty heavy.
Yeah, so that was, to your point, we wanted to put some at Lincoln Park.
Engineers would have to take a hard look at that and see how many you could support, because the electric cars, too, are heavier than normal cars. So depending on when it was built, the total weight may not allow you to take full advantage of. You may have to have as many cars to have those chargers up there. But those chargers are really flexible. They require no infrastructure. You can pack it up on a trailer and move it to somewhere else. And that's But it would give you the flexibility when you're doing the initial network to find out what demand is where. Then you could hardwire the man that thing. It just seems to me that ought to get an emphasis in being able to do that. Likewise, when you're talking about, okay, we're going to go to disadvantaged neighborhoods and put this charging infrastructure in. Okay, am I going to be buying a $2,000 meter as opposed to the cheapest used electric car of $50,000? Ain't going to happen. What am I going to do to overcome that? Putting the infrastructure doesn't do me any good if nobody's going to use it. So how do I address that fact? Do I do it during your transit stations? Do I do it in your parks? Do I do it where I get the biggest attraction from the small numbers of vehicles that are going to be? And I don't think we've thought that out.
Well, coming soon to a parking lot near you, and maybe a presentation for another day, is the city's public EV charging program that is going to be deployed. We're going to be starting to swap out some of the existing chargers that but the intent here is we have a 10-year concession agreement with a single vendor to finance, own, operate, maintain charging infrastructure at all of our city-owned parking lots. And that will be a consistent network for folks. There's all sorts of terms and conditions included in the agreement, such that there's required uptimes, the user experience has to be consistent, and it gives us the ability, you know, and sort of have that control over the functionality to then ensure that there is accessible charging infrastructure in every community.
And going right along with that, there's something that's happening now in a lot of the public infrastructure. It's almost like parking meters. They get vandalized. So when we create that program, we also need to create a support program where somebody is going around and replacing the charger cables, replacing the credit card slots, whatever it needs to do to be able to keep those in operation, just like we do with parking meters. And that's something, you know, you might want to talk to the charger manufacturers about, is the robustness that we use on parking meters. If somebody tampers with them, they self-report. They say, hey, somebody came and tampered with me, so you can send the repair guy right out. Instead of having to spend on controlling lifestyle. Anyway, so much for
thank you.
My
yes.
20 cents worth.
So I have a 2020 Nissan Leaf, and I really appreciate Gary's looking at how difficult it is just to get the whole landscape of the chargers to be available. So I think it'd be wonderful if the city had a great website that would make it easy for consumers to find everything and know which chargers would be okay for their car. One of the problems is my car uses this connection called CHADMO, CHADMO. Most of the connections are this one called 1972. Then, of course, we have the Teslas, and who knows, you know. So this is a problem the city and everyone's going to have to deal with, is what do you invest in, given these differences? Is there some way to make these other things be compatible? I think that there could be a technological fix so that my car could use something else, but that hasn't been done yet.
Tesla mailed all their owners and adapt.
There are chargers that adapt all of them.
Yeah.
And
that is definitely built into the public program.
Yeah. I also wanted to say, I was, San Diego 350 is very skeptical of hydrogen because of the fact that it's so dirty in most cases. And it seems to be being pushed, especially by fossil fuel interests. But I appreciated the fact that you treated the user rights and it's really for the places where, there's no other solution. It does seem like the batteries are getting better and better, and battery frames are very viable, and also many of the buses that are used to be railways needed to be hydrogen because of the length of the routes, and now able to be batteries. So anyway, that's just something to watch. And I was wondering, you mentioned if you're looking to create 40 hydrogen charging stations. I was wondering how you would decide where to put those. Yeah, that's one of the.
Oh, in the.
That's in the gap analysis.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was like, wait, where is that? Yeah.
So that's the gap analysis that we did across the region for 2021. So you are correct that hydrogen as a market is still nascent and evolving, but it is there. There is significant amount of state money and capital potentially being invested into it, including legislative requirements for permit streamlining, et cetera. So it would be irresponsible for us to not acknowledge that it is going to be in various places across
plus 40 charges, hydrogen charges, is how we would decide what to put them because the uses seem to be so specific. And it sounded like you're, space for hydrogen charges in the city, but nothing that people go out in cars looking for them.
And again, to Heather's point, that's a region wide analysis. So considering sort of all of the different locations throughout the county and thinking about those applications in particular, it's going to be a collective.
So it might be a good quote, for example.
Exactly. Or down these, to the border crossings or up closer to some of the industrial areas. It just will kind of depend.
So the last comment I want to make is, I read the report, I thought it was great. It's so wonderful to do all this stuff and what we get done. And, we have so many plans that we've made in the past that we've been able to actually accomplish. So, there's so many things that we plan for that involve so many different agencies and departments. Is there some overall coordination of this? And is there a way to be monitoring it? We plan by 2035 we don't have this. Now it's 2028 and here's the way we are. Are we on track and we're on behind what we do? So that we don't have this, I always go back to the vision zero plan. It's a great plan, but here we are in 2025 with zero targets.
Fair enough. I think there are a number of different kind of touch points across different entities. One of the collaborations is this Accelerate to Zero collaborative. So that's again kind of, I mentioned it without naming it, but the city, the county, SANDAG, SDG&E, and then our local Air Resources Board collectively working together to sort of share and flag different things and how are we going to work through some of these things. The city is obviously has targets in our cap, so we are committed to doing this. We will be tracking it, thinking about ways that we can kind of share that information. And then, thinking there's the regional plan that will have its own sort of mechanisms for tracking different things, obviously different levels of data, but also thinking too about the building code, and that is continuing to change. And so every, that triennial cycle, that Title 24, it's no longer these like incremental changes, it's pretty substantial. So that too will sort of like force the hand in many cases. And what we're trying to do, and I've kind of gotten away a little bit from the strategy, but it's included within the strategy, is trying to sort of get ahead of some of what we're seeing coming, as well as supporting our goals, which is that public charging program. Things that we can't control, like city-owned property, and trying to leverage that to at least try and get some of that charging infrastructure out into our communities, and not in a way with which, some
of our lower-income communities don't necessarily have that same type of access. So really using that portfolio approach to kind of help balance the checkbooks. I think it's important, and it's educated a lot on this, because it's not something that I've and kind of the same question that Gary had about the water goal objective of equitable distribution of infrastructure, which I think would be mostly chargers, and that sort of which is a good idea, but distribution of the vehicles is not going to be equitable because they're so expensive. So that's a challenge. Get the infrastructure there at the same time that the access to the vehicles are getting there. And it'd be nice if you had a subsidy program for vehicles, but they're expensive, which then maybe reminded me of the e-bike incentive program, which is focused, the state program is focused on
Troy, Wiley, Chisby, and the infrastructure for charging them is in most places it needs to be already. And so I was kind of surprised that the strategy didn't mention e-bikes more than it did. Got a few passing commissions, but it seemed to me that there was a real opportunity there. Certainly, during the school trips are being revolutionized, I might say, by e-bikes. A lot of other places where I think the trips can be converted to those kinds of trips. Now, some of that is going to depend on bike plan, right? Because the infrastructure, e-bikes need the infrastructure too, just like analog bikes, as they say. So, there's got to be, but there should be some better meshing between the two options. Truly zero emission vehicle even cars, until we get rid of all the gas powered generation, they're not zero emission, they're just exporting their emissions to central location.
CO2.
Yes, understood. And again, that's sort of the idea around trying to integrate all the different pieces, but to your point, we have all these different things going on, including the curb and parking folks, right? And so a lot of conversations about, pursuing grants or other opportunities where we consider things like how do we, charge our bike? Well, what does that look like, from a micro-mobility sort of their usage perspective? Is the profile that do we put chargers in the parking lot or do we put them kind of different? So again, just these conversations are definitely taking place, but I do appreciate that and we'll take a look at sort of opportunities.
The need for bike chargers, I think, is fairly limited because people, I don't know, but people I know there's no range anxiety.
As long as we can keep those cheap batteries out of here to keep going up and smoking the water.
But there are places like, the bike cage over the Wells Fargo building, which is probably there's a Camino plug, but some limited places like that. For the most part, you just take it from the truck. Yeah, regular no time in the day.
A couple questions. What kind of coordination is happening with MTS one of the things that was mentioned was electric transportation, electric buses. And if we push people to rail, we're achieving a lot more electric. People to all forms of transit until MTS really gets the buses more and more prevalent at the tune of $1 million a bus or something like that. What if any coordination is happening to try to encourage that transition at MTS?
I think that generally speaking, there's coordination at different levels. That is definitely not.
Yeah, I mean, is it in the strategy or is it sort of an aside?
No, there's definitely in the strategy. Right. I think from Sandag and other convening areas, mm-hmm. there's opportunities. I think a lot of the, I'm going to say low hanging fruit, I think that's a little loose because it's not quite that easy. But, the first step is to really look at the things we do have control over. Mm-hmm. The things that we do have control over are things like our parking lots. That being said, we've heard from our community members that there is a number of locations where, the transit sites would be really ideal. And so we've been collecting a list, and I think the next step would be to share that with our counterparts.
Sure. So in terms of sites for car charging at transit stations, is that what you're saying?
Yes.
And then encouraging the transit agencies to transition their vehicles to electric. That's outside of your bailiwick, agreed, but it is mentioned in the document. So I'm just wondering.
Strategy 4, which is all about collaboration and partnerships in those areas where we would work with our regional partners, transit partners, all of those to both share lessons learned and partner on opportunities where you're using multiple different parties, property, or tools and money.
transition is de facto because of state requirements.
I think it's 2030 versus the 2030. I think the fleet turnover is like 6 years of us. There's a little bit.
So they're buying new electric every time they have a turnover.
I'm not sure what the rollout right now, but it's leading up to the 2030.
The next one on my list is regarding our utilities. So what, you know, is SDG&E weighing in on this or sending Community Power in terms of, I mean, they would be incentivized to encourage this transition, right? Assuming their infrastructure is in place to provide the power. Could they be doing more to partner with the city to push this transition forward?
We've been working with SDG&E very closely, and as it relates to specifically things like, again, the charging program is like the easiest thing to help you just because, it's something that is very tangible in this space. But even before that, obviously they're part of the A to Z collaborative, and so, continuing to work together, is there enough power? What does the grid look like? What do the transformers look like where we want to put charging infrastructure? And it's not just on the public side, right? It's the fleet side as well. So we've had, we have very kind of consistent regular check-ins with the utility. They are very aware of the locations that we're looking to put our charging infrastructure, as well as, again, a lot of conversations with our fleet side. So they're aware sort of the needs and forthcoming needs as it relates to that transition. So we've been working very closely with them. We also have a very close relationship with SDCP, and we're working with them as well. The charging program specifically requires 100% renewable. So, to the extent that the product is the product, what's available is what they will be using. We've been having and continue to have conversations with SDCP too, as it relates to things like grid design and other opportunities to get creative with this program and pilot some new things. And so this is sort of, it's new territory for us, but it's kind of exciting because it gives us an opportunity to sort of play around a little. I don't mean that quite that loosely, but it gives us an opportunity to sort of experiment and see if there's opportunities to sort of test the waters.
And then last thing, with the Infrastructure and Jobs Act, there's so many funding opportunities, grants is, the mayor's grants team and government affairs people out chasing this money.
Oh yes, we're actively.
It's open on my screen right now.
I can see your screen. That's how I'm doing.
He's but we are actively in the process of putting together or wrapping up. I guess it's due next week. Round two charging and fueling infrastructure grant application to help supplement some of the deployment, the actual charging infrastructure for our program. So we're definitely moving forward in that space. We've gotten some funding from the federal government to pursue some wireless charging solutions as well. So really trying to explore sort of all of those solutions. We got a grant to actually put together a regional, so in conjunction with our partners, put together a regional sort of study or approach for citing those off-grid chargers as well. So really trying to kind of think about the suite of products that are available to help sort of supplement in different sorts of applications.
This was just maybe a more broad endorsement of the collaboration strategies and making sure that really inclusive of community groups, because I recently did a review for CARB and it included electric vehicle rebate or incentive programs in California, and I'm sure I'm not telling you anything that you don't know, but they haven't been successful in reaching underserved communities even when they have income and requirements to do so. So there's probably something kind of to your point that the charging infrastructure isn't there, so buying a vehicle doesn't make sense, but it was beyond just the cost of a vehicle. So there's more to understand there. So I guess just a thumbs up and encouraging you to really
good, bad, ugly, whatever they are. So it's sort of kind of trying to figure out what each of those, you know, main technologies might be. And the secondhand market is growing a lot. The utility right now actually does have a more incentive for secondhand vehicles. So I think it's starting, but you're right. I mean, there's a lot we're all learning here. Even with that, it's difficult and it may end up worsening the disparity, right? Mm-hmm. Because the communities start to have better air quality and then it's like the disparity is growing instead of.
Anything else from the board members?
Appreciate the update.
I just want to second Stefan's point about new bikes, especially in light of the city's growing mode shift. I think promoting new bikes would be really important to do wherever they go. So they use such a tiny fraction of the electricity that we do here. It's just really tiny. So that's all I want to do.
You all would stop disparaging tracks.
Disparaging tracks. Thanks for finding
it. Yeah, before we get into the bicycle master plan, can I ask another question?
Yep.
Does anybody know where we have a current definition of what's allowed in bicycle lanes and what's not?
Bicycles.
I've got a 45 mile an hour bicycle. Am I allowed in the bicycle lane?
Not a bicycle.
Well, that's what I mean. Does anybody have a list of where those definitions are? Because I've been trying for the last 4 days.
I would think it's in the vehicle code, but I will follow up and track that down for you.
Thanks.
It is in the vehicle code because I know it's worth the time. You can go to calbike.org.
Calbike.org.
Yeah, it's the California Bicycle Promotion Records. And they, my bike worked a lot on getting the definitions of e-bikes in three classes. And I said, your bike is not a bike. Yeah, that's got to be modified. None of them are supposed to be designed to go that fast. So, which, not, you know, a lot of them are modified.
I
would get
with this. I don't think. This is an information item, so we can move on to item number 5, which is a discussion. Bike master plan update.
Thanks everybody for having me. My name is Maureen Gardner. I'm a senior deputy mayor in the Sustainability and Mobility Department, and my team is leading the bicycle master plan update effort. So here today also is Phil Trom, our program manager, and online is Emmanuel Alfora. He's the project manager, but he's going to log off at 5 o'clock. And not here today, but Magdalena Taylor is also our assistant engineer that's working on the project. In addition, we have a whole team of consultant experts. Farron Pierce is our lead, and they're also working with CityWorks and CR Associates. Also wanted to note that this is a grant-funded project funded by the Caltrans Sustainable Transportation Planning Program. So today I'm going to go over what the Bicycle Master Plan update is, briefly discuss our tools and approaches, and what's coming next in our process. So a Bicycle Master Plan is basically a document that guides the development and maintenance of bicycle facilities. And the city's current bike master plan was adopted in December of 2013. So why is it being updated? Well, it's over a decade old and it's in need of update because of evolved technologies, practices, and policies. For example, cycle tracks was a fairly new emerging design when the city was going through development of our plan, and in addition, the city recently updated our general plan. We've refreshed our mobility element, so this is an opportunity to align those policies. We have the Bicycle Master Plan update is also a supporting action of the Climate Action Plan, and as most of
you probably know, we have a goal of 10% of daily trips in the city being made by bike by 2035. So this bike master plan update is also going to feed into our mobility master plan, which is our overall framework for mobility. And finally, consistent with the city's equity forward approach, this effort is going to be creating an inclusive community-based plan through engagement so that it can serve all city users. So what will be in the bicycle master plan is a refreshed bicycle network based on safety needs, equity, looking at facility gaps, and density of population and destinations. It's going to be recommending supportive strategies related to e-bikes, bike share, scooter share. It's going to look at first last mile connections to transit, as well as design concepts for the high priority projects and targets for implementation. So our project vision is to improve and grow a safe, connected, and convenient network for people on bicycles and micromobility users of all ages. So high level, I'm sharing the schedule here on a couple of slides. So we're cataloging the lived experience now. In the fall, we'll be ground truthing and sharing back what we've heard from the input. In winter, spring 2035, we'll be refining the network. In fall 2025, looking at priority project development. By winter 2026, we plan to have a draft plan, and our deliverable for our grant, which ends in spring of 2026, is to have a final draft plan that we will present to our active transportation infrastructure committee. Following that, we would move forward with the environmental and adoption of the plan at City Council. And after this first bicycle master plan update, we have another grant that we were awarded, a federal grant for safety for all, and that's going to really be looking at further conceptual design to get these projects construction ready, and also bicycle parking guidelines for that, and further exam new safe routes to schools. So that'll be the next step after the completed. So we're currently, like I said, in phase of the project. We're collecting relevant data and public input to inform the development of the plan. It's going to culminate in the state of the network memo that's really going to be looking at the city's network and the policies and programs, highlighting needs and opportunities. So we've got, I guess on the slide, we're going to go back and share at the end of the presentation our website for input, so the project website, as well as our public engagement page, which includes a survey, an interactive feedback map, and a trip map to share with people who are riding today. So in terms of our planning process, we're going to be looking at needs and deficiencies, as well as demand and latent demand, and overlaying these to help inform the priorities and investments. So which communities have the highest potential for demand and focus infrastructure there, for example, or where are the greatest needs for safety, comfort issues, etc. So a little bit more about our tools and approaches. We're looking at equity, we're building on past input, we're considering all ages and abilities and learning from others. We are, for in terms of equity, that's really a multifaceted approach. We've done a lot of equity outreach with the Mobility Master Plan. Know that Sandag has gone through a Vision Zero Action Plan and also the Regional Active Transportation Plan, which has been paused, but they did a lot of outreach and gained a lot of input from those efforts. So we are making sure that we pull all of that in. But in terms of equity, we are, like I said, taking all the past input that was developed, created with the Mobility Master Plan, for example. This slide, the next slide shares some of those. And we're making sure that all of that input is being incorporated in our project and policy development. And then a little bit more about all ages and abilities, next slide, is how probably nothing new to this group, but just, you know, that it's that concept in urban planning that focuses on creating infrastructure that's safe, comfortable, and accessible for people of all ages and abilities. So youth, seniors, and people with disabilities, to design environments inclusive and supportive for a wide range of abilities, cognitive and physical. And those key principles are safety, comfort, and connectivity, accessibility, and inclusivity. So what that's going to look like for the bike infrastructure is protected bike lanes, bike boulevards, and multi-use paths that feel safe for all skill levels. Our tools and approaches include learning from others, so looking at best practices related to safe, separated bike design, safety, quick build implementation, network development and amenities, and supporting programs. And just a little bit more about supporter programs, probably nothing new to this group, but those things include before and after studies, so how are we evaluating our network performance, bicycle parking, safe routes to schools, quick build implementation, TDM enforcement, demonstration projects, education, and like I said, including bike and scooter share, and also adaptive bicycling programs. So next steps, we're hoping to create more than just an updated bike network. We want to create a plan that makes bicycling safer, convenient, and attractive and enjoyable for all San Diegans. And with that, I can leave the schedule up here with the next steps. This input is being collected through September 10th, and at that time, the consultant is going to be basically kind of pulling it all together and documenting everything, kind of getting the things together. We'll be able to continue to take, you know, input from people, but in order to actually start moving forward plan development, we have to have a date where, you know, at this point, everything's going to be included. So you can see on the, it is the feedback map. If you scroll a little bit to the top. I was just going to point out, I think there's something like already 2,200 pieces of data that have been inputted into this. It's at the top of the map. There it is. 2338 contributions so far. And on top of the sandbag efforts, gathered like 3,000 pieces of input. So all of that is going to be collected, and we'll be sorting through that. It's a huge endeavor, as you can imagine, but we want to make sure that we do all of that.
And trip, people mapping their trips, we've got almost 1,500.
Mm-hmm. I just had a book called, the thing that's on it, it's called Bike Lanes or White Lanes, and it's about the reality that most of the activists in the bicycle community tend to be middle class, upper class people who are living in certain neighborhoods. And they are most likely to be the people who are also responding to this. When I looked at Southeast San Diego this quickly, it didn't seem like there's a lot of comments anywhere else. So I think that's something that we really need to take into account, that the people who are most likely to respond.
We are trying to get the word out and get the word out through our community-based organizations. So we've had several focused groups with those organizations and are trying to get the survey out through those. Any additional suggestions that you have, we're going to continue to try to do that through the process. If maybe we'll get more interest when we have, you know, start reporting out again. And there are a few groups, I'm not going to remember the name of them now, but that are in the community that are
doing an annual transportation exhibition, and we're really trying to educate the community on sustainable alternatives. So they've probably been great people to confirm.
How are the
So we are currently going through, like, basically announcing at the different groups, so the different boards. We've got an announcement. We're hoping to make it the Active Transportation and Infrastructure Committee, just working through the dates of when they might be available to actually get a report out on the feedback as well. We're going to Planning Commission. We've tried to get it out through social media, through the city's email lists. The mayor has sent out several sort of citywide announcements through his, you know, employee newsletter. It's on the city's internet right now. If you open the city's webpage, it's like the Bike Master Plan, and all the links are announced there. I haven't specifically reached out to each council office, so this is a good, you know, sort of thing that I think we need to do.
Yeah, I think our, going back to, like, we have an outreach component of this on the project team, and they have a stakeholders list. My recollection, we had the districts there, but we also kind of went even further to the adjacent municipalities. So we had National City 11. So that was one of those things to acknowledge crossover. So a reminder to me to double check that council, assuming that we had the right person and how we did that. But I recall thinking, oh, this is great. We're going to do it a little better going across.
I think for me, when I saw the data, there will be a gap for, like, communities, this is for district 10 and district 8. And I'm just curious, you know, like, how is it being attributed? And like, when they're, like, when the Moreno is being kind of dog, like, for that rural part, like, those get a lot of turnout from folks. So I'm just curious to know if there is that integration between district offices that, like, those communities. They already have a table out there, like, if that could be part of the outreach that is requested for support. And then I think on my day job, we just did a bike ride Saturday from City Heights to Fargo Logan, specifically the season of Travis Park. I wish I would have known about the survey, so I would have been able to tell my team to do that outreach with folks. You know, like, those are, so I don't know.
Where
who you all engage in
it yet,
but my organization
isn't
aware. So
I think we can move it. Yeah. Yeah, we'll come back on that. And I know we have the email sent out to the board after the last meeting was the website plus the fact sheet. So that's one thing hopefully that we can encourage people, not like print for us to hand out or join them in events or send the fact sheet if that's a way they do.
Each council district has different people decided the elements of their communities to do community outreach specifically. And they know all the different groups. And if you just give the information to them, they all go around every month and make presentations to all the local groups, and they can include that as part of their presentation. You know, for 1 month, it may be stimulating people to get on there and do it before you close it out.
Currently 6 days away now?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that is like 6 days, isn't it?
Yeah, it's tough. It's been a challenge, you know, like, to get the word out.
We had some really high engagement on social media, and perhaps we'll have to talk about it if we extend it and try to figure that out, like, just to make sure.
I've been aware of it for longer than that. Yeah, but that, again, is...
Yeah, but I'm not...
That focus on that community.
Okay, so... Maybe we the extension, because I sent it out, the information when it first got out, to the newsletter, the University City newsletter. They did not print it on their hard copy. They only put it at the back end on their electronic copy out to people, which concerned me. So in the next meetings, the next two meetings this month, I was going to point that out, that was withholding information to the community. But
we will still be open to receiving information. We just, and we will, it's not like we're going to ignore that. It's just that our consultant is going to get started with whatever they have on September 10th.
Okay.
We'll maintain the input, the ability to provide input after that.
Good. Okay. That's.
Maybe a recommendation is that the consultant looks for those gaps, right? And there's just very focused outreach after the 10th because the gaps are going to be there. Communities that haven't responded.
Yeah, especially as.
You want to do because that definitely needs to be built in. It is the thing that never gets funding, you know, for this stuff. Especially as we're rolling out cycle tracks and other things, we have to deal with, you know, intersections and figure out what is safe or what's not. So thinking about innovative data collection strategies, because a lot of times the reporting system is really lacking. And ridership, and we need both.
Two bicycle counters for the city of San Diego is just not acceptable.
Well, and also crashes, because it's really hard in class four. Those don't necessarily get reported because they're maybe not part of the roadway, and they don't get reported if there's not like property damage. So there's just some intricacies there that we should be thought about in advance of this so that you can evaluate it.
Is there any budget to do like farmers markets and places like that to collect information?
Yeah, we do have some pop-ups included in our engagement plan. I don't know the quantities off the top of my head, but we have also been willing whenever city staff. There's been a few gaps that were pointed out to us where somebody missed the CBO meeting, and we're making an effort to make sure that anybody that reaches out that's really trying to meet with us and provide their input that we're staff is available to do that.
This is short notes on the 14th. There was a bike collection during the parks and culture. Community park, which is, one of those communities that we need to get to.
I am trying to get to CPC, but I think their next meeting is on the 27th. So,
well, the UCPG is the 10th, and I'll bring it up and get the website out there. And yeah.
Please let people know that we'll keep the portal open. I think
that was the key.
Start grabbing numbers. And I think this is the first. I mean, we sort of introed it with following the last month with our work plan. Now the presentation. We'll look for various touch points as we reach milestones and capture some recording. I think the first of all the next almost two years, right? I think it's the full window. We have some deliverables based on how this first contract landed this December. So that's with all this ground truthing and really understanding where our trips are and what the comments are. So that's probably a good time to. I know there's a lot of items that you all want to tackle if it's to the end of the agenda stuff, but. I think, potentially, maybe look for us on this item back in January or something like that, just to keep you going at somewhat of a quarterly such a different landscape. We're taking it, not just the lines on the map. It's this full passenger perspective, starting and ending, bike, parking, the whole breadth of the trip. So it's a different way of doing it, but I think we're, you know, we need to make sure we broaden every part of that. So, yeah, just to kind of where we'll go from here is, you know, expect that sort of report out on the data collection.
This is a discussion item, so we can move on. So subcommittee updates. I want to apologize because I didn't have any jobs in subcommittee for the budget. I got super busy, but I'll try to do this today. Oh my god, there's no summertime.
Or directly to us,
right.
Doesn't matter, we just want information.
Okay, so
Adam
wants to
move.
So,
does
it need to
be moved?
So, it's a
report from the committee? Yes. Yeah, I move we accept the committee's report.
Yeah, it's a little point of order, I think, with this because it's yeah, not retroactive. It's if you're making a new action to not go back and approve, because we approved the minutes last time, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
I think
was it documented? I mean,
it's
an action. But
we vote.
We have now circulated our next draft of the street design manual internal and closed the comments on that, which means dust settling, we kind of figure out where we're at. We received another significant batch of comments. We didn't know. I think we got about 1,000 last summer. Worked on those all year. We just got another 1,000, basically. We're going to compress that time period. What that means is we don't think realistically we'll be getting it out next month. It's probably going to be early November. That's what we're going to put a marker down on. So I know we wanted to come back to you on the mesh plan again, that's a separate thing, but that one is continuing to move. It's still compressed, but moving. This one, I think we have to make sure that we throw up feedback. The critical thing is that this street design manual is really catching up on 20 years of mobility treatment. So as you can imagine, as processes from both private development, from that's our DSB group, our engineering capital projects for a unique city development, they're all sort of putting the hat on, what if I got this permit? What if we get this money for the capital? And they're flushing that all through these designs and things are coming out. So I think that said, we want to make sure we deliver a product that lands and fits all the designs that you want to see, and we don't have exceptions for cycle tracks or roundabouts, right? Which were in Alaska, those are my two examples. But as you can imagine, there's even more as you get into the details. So that's something we're really pushing. But I just want to make sure it's clear, we're not idle. This was a critical thing, I think, for all of you, especially as we looked at complete streets policy, and now this is like almost the end of the continuum for this batch of conversations around planning, policy, and implementation. So that's coming. It's just we have a crack team working on that, and then mobility master plan. We're looking at that October 2nd date, trying to get up there so you could have it available and hear from us as far as what to look at and changes, based on October. So that's what we're laser focused on. So we continue to do that. I think that's kind of germane to the next couple of meetings, maybe jumping over a meeting or two there, but I wanted to make sure that was clear. What we were kind of calling it like an administrative update.
Right.
So
just by way of background, I was in the weeds on this once, and it's unreasonable to expect this committee to get into the weeds like that. And yet, some of us are keenly interested in some of the details. So, I'm just curious to see what kind of review and comment would you give to the ability.
Yeah, and that's so our idea was to acknowledge the interest on both the structured boards, the advocacy side, primarily the bike and pedestrian group, given that's we're adding this whole pedestrian realm to the assignment. And then the development community, and that's BIA, NAOP, it's like commercial, all things development. So that includes several touch points. Those are probably that's like the range. I think we're open to any and all comment. We'll be pushing out information. Probably less so social media. I mean, that's something with bike backstrap that people understand. I think street design's but I would say, on its face, it looks super technical. But I think you all understand the breadth of the right of way and possible treatments means implementation. So you guys have have connected the dots, and that's important to do and to educate those who are interested and willing. We'll get ahead of when we find that date for release, getting those dates, so that includes when we can come to you, but also getting on, there's a quarterly developer meeting, there's, and we know there's interest from the bike coalition, and so we're trying, if you can help us too with any way to get the word out. We don't have an artificial closure date on it, but also as a technical manager, we don't want to just sit out there and not be able.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I need to go and you're all going to turn into conflicts if somebody can. I'm really sorry.
So basically, I think, are we good for this one?
Yeah.
Okay. So basically, I did some members if you don't have any. I do need a vice chair, so maybe there's interesting to talk to me. And then we also do some meetings, and if you don't come, we don't have forums because right now our forum is at school. So if you can't come, let us know right here. We have district 8, district 3, update on vacancies.
Yeah. We're working hard.
District 3, district
8, MRO. District 3 shouldn't have any problem. Just getting into the mayor's office.
Because of that. But not our current so I guess that's just a good thing. So we're aware moving forward.
You have to plan you have to coordinate your vacations.
We will take vacations with them. But schedule for the future meetings are there. Unless there's other updates on numbers, I can go.
I actually ran into Alfred that day and asked him, I said, yeah, there's everything. And there are people on e-bikes that are things they shouldn't be doing, and this is like the social walk and boardwalks. And yet, all those are, you know, just in the law allowed, I guess, unless, I guess the city has the option to.
State law says municipal ordinance is governed.
Well, I'm just going to say that I think, you know,
the board has done the same thing.
Yeah,
all along the Central Park area.
I think
I do. Bicycle police.
Perhaps.
Make responsible drivers, you don't have an issue.
We aren't there any policing worse for traffic.
Hey, I understand, but that's the solution.
Okay, perfect. So then we'll call the, this includes our meeting. Sorry, next meeting will be October 2nd. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So given our numbers,
yeah,
what you really need to advise for is the one time you're not going to do it.
And that's where
thank you, Mark. Yeah, nothing.